Hello, welcome to the Citywire Funds Fanatic. I'm Gavin Lumsden, editor of Investment Trust Insider, and I'm with Jeremy Gordon, editor of Citywire Funds Insider.
Hi, Gavin.
Hello, this is a first for us to do a podcast together. It's for an end-of-year review. We're going to be looking at the events and issues from this year from the perspective of investment trusts and funds. So, Jeremy, 2022 has been a really difficult year, what with the war in Ukraine, political instability and rampant inflation knocking a wide range of markets and asset classes. You've been looking at the performance of different assets in both dollar and sterling. How bad does it look? Are there any bright spots?
Well, this is one of the interesting things. I think, you know, just how, you know, no one's saying it's been an easy year in markets, but just how bad it's been does depend a bit on where you are. And actually, due to the pound's weakness for sterling-based investors, the picture looks a bit better. So, for example, global equities, I think we're looking at the MSCI World here, down 14.5% this year, or the first 11 months of this year to the end of November, for those based in America. But actually, for most of our listeners based in the UK investing in sterling, down just 3%. And I think one of the other things to note is the FTSE has finally had a relatively better year, albeit in absolute terms, it doesn't sound that great, but compared to global markets, up 1.8%. Perhaps a caveat there is that's driven quite a lot by the some of the big resources stocks in the FTSE 100, miners, BP Shell, which have been very strong performers. And unfortunately, active managers often tend to underown those stocks.
So the old-fashioned UK has kind of come good after, dismal few years.
It has.
The Brexit referendum. So that's equities.
Yes, indeed.
Other parts of the investment universe.
Well, really, this has been the more extraordinary thing. What's happened in bonds? You know, we knew at the start of the year that interest rates were going to go up. It sounds quite a long time ago now, but you know, I'm sure you'll remember central bankers, including the Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, spent all of last year harping on about how inflation would be transitory. That seems very much not to be the case. It's well above 10% in the UK now, I think. And the effect of that, as interest rates have risen, as inflation has remained high, has been pretty cruel for bonds. So looking at gilts, so UK government bonds, down an extraordinary 20.6%.
That is extraordinary.
This year. I mean, these are meant to be safe assets.
I knew it was bad, but that is...
But perhaps even more extraordinary, really, is... Of course, the UK government also issues inflation-linked gilts, better known as linkers. You might think that these would be a good place to be, given inflation's consistently overshot expectations. Actually, it's been quite the reverse. The UK index-linked bond sector is down nearly 31%.
Well, that is amazing. So maybe we have touched on this before, I think, in both our podcasts and
yes,
where on the city you are.
Well, I think the very quick reason, you know, without certainly claiming to be an expert myself, is... it's a very long-dated index in the UK, and basically, you know, as many of our listeners will know, the longer-dated bonds are, the more they're hurt by rising interest rates, and that has massively trumped the inflation.
So these linkers are very interest rate sensitive. So a lot of the fund managers, the funds that actually like to use them, have been going in at the shorter dated end.
Indeed.
To be less exposed to that huge impact from rising interest rates. Terrible. Okay. Anywhere else worth looking at?
Well, I think maybe, as always, perhaps we can quickly pick out how some individual funds have done. I mean, you know, those figures at the index level mask maybe just how bad it's been for certain funds.
Well, it's been a year of a huge growth sell-off, which has started at the end of last year, as you're saying, as the market really woke up to inflation in November of last year.
That's right.
And if you look at all the charts, that's when growth funds just start to, which have had an amazing run, decade or so, really fell off a cliff.
Yes. Well, and maybe that's
that
a good
on
point.
And on.
It did. And maybe that's a good point to bring in actually an investment trust we both own, and lots of people in the UK own, Scottish Mortgage, which has very much been at the forefront of that sell-off.
Absolutely. So, yeah, FTSE 100 Investment Trust are listed on the FTSE 100, but not investing there, investing virtually everywhere else. Very bullish growth stock picking, investing in unquoted companies, quoted companies, but companies that they think the managers think are going to you know, disrupt their markets and be real long-term winners.
That's
long-term,
right.
Been a very successful strategy. But this year saw the founding fund manager, James Anderson, leave. That was sort of well flagged up. But it was an interesting, in the year that he leaves, the shares are down 43%. The actual net value of the investments it holds overall, the portfolio is down 37%. So, you know,
very tough year.
Seen those kind of crashes in Scottish mortgage since the financial crisis of 2008-2009. And yeah, the shares that used to trade at a small premium above the asset value are now trading 7.5% discount below. This is of 6th of December. So yeah, that 43% share price slump versus an 8% decline in sterling, as you said, of the MSCI World. So a terrible year.
Yeah, and remind us who we've got in place there now, Gavin, in terms of the managers without James Anderson.
So co-manager Tom Slater has been in place for a long time.
Yeah, very experienced.
Is in charge, and he's got Lawrence Burns as a co-manager who joined, I think, last year in the run-up to James Anderson's departure. So, yeah, two managers, and they've been reducing China. The buybacks are going on. There's an area of concern. So one of the things that Scottish Mortgage has kind of pioneered is a global equities fund, but it pioneered the use of investing in private equity unquoted companies. So
with fantastic results.
Fantastic results. But, of course, these kinds of companies to invest in have been at the epicenter of kind of write-downs and falls in values. So this kind of, there was basically a bubble in late-stage private equity companies preparing to come to the market and often floating. And there was huge valuations up until the end of last year. And, of course, all that began to unwind with the inflation scare and interest rates going up. I mean, one thing we learned this year is how sensitive, we talked about inflation-linked bonds.
Yes.
It's sensitive to interest rates, which seems ironic because interest rates go up to deal with inflation. But growth stocks of the kind that Scottish Mortgage and other funds buy are incredibly sensitive to interest rate rise.
Indeed.
So we'll come on to the outlook maybe sort of or towards the end. But I mean, if interest rates, the hope is after such a hammering that if interest rates are...
If the expectations start to level off,
then perhaps this horror show will come to an end. But yeah, Scottish Mortgage has been buying back its shares, and you know, the private equity portion is a bit of a worry because they're basically at their 30% limit and they can't invest anymore. And
they're well over it, I think.
I think 32% when the IMB results came out recently. 30% cap, so it means they can't invest in any more unquoted. That's enough, but. You know, structurally, it's a little uncomfortable because obviously, if the public equity side continues to fall, then you know that proportion in private equity will continue to rise and you know, create a bit of an imbalance.
And as I understand it, they'd be limited from making follow-on investments, which can be quite important in this space.
That's right, exactly. So they wouldn't be able to support the companies that they still like. So they really need a rebound. Their investors sorely need it.
We want it. Yeah.
We want it. So let's hope 23 is a better year for Scottish Mortgage. Listen, I've been talking lots about Scottish Mortgage. That's just one investment trust. What about the funds? You did a printout of the best and top performing open-ended funds. Do you want to...
Well, that's right. As always, you know,
how did that play out with the fund side of it?
As always, you know, major caveats looking at 1 year performance, but that's what we're here to do today. Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose some names that instantly jump out on that growth sell-off theme is, well, one would be Baillie Gifford American. Now, this fund, you know, has sold off for very similar reasons to Scottish Mortgage. In fact, owns quite a lot of the same stocks. And was a fantastic pandemic performer. You know, it delivered more than 100% return for its investors in 2020.
It was the best performing.
It was the best performing.
The investment trust was the best performing investment trust. So I imagine.
And I think the open-ended fund was the best performer amongst open-ended funds available in the UK. Now, in retrospect, you know, people should never expect that kind of return to be maintained. And it's been a... It was a difficult year in 2021 for Baillie Gifford American, and it's been a difficult year again, down 48% to the end of November, so nearly halving. And on a similar note, while we're at it, There is Caffey Woods ARK Innovation ETF. There is a mirror fund available in Europe run by Nikko, called the Nikko Asset Management ARK Disruptive Innovation Fund. That's down 54.5%. So very painful indeed. I suppose we'll come on to a couple of other areas that have done badly. I mean, one that stands out instantly and for obvious reasons are any funds with exposure to Russia, Eastern European shares, and that kind of thing. Now, I think there'd be many, many more of these actually on this list, except for the fact that trading in many of them has been suspended since the invasion. And so effectively, we can't see how bad they've done. In fact, we don't really know how bad they've done.
Because it was an extraordinary situation, basically. A whole market, Russia, was kind of cut off from international capitalism, from global markets.
That's right.
We're told that you cannot invest there. If you invest there, you'll be, you know, punishing US sanctions, and et cetera. So Russia, which was, you know, an emerging or frontier market, has just been cut out. So what was the, so these funds, have any closed down, or are they still sort of nominally there, suspended?
Funds are starting to close down or announce closures, but they can't sell the shares. In fact, one of our reporters, Jamie Colvin, did a very interesting story early in the autumn about the extent to which funds have been able to trade Russian stocks or not. Basically, they had a bit, but it was very difficult, or even rather a grey area legally or ethically. And now I think, you know, they definitely can't. And so funds can announce closures, but actually, you know, they can't sell the assets yet. And what will happen when they are able to is also unclear, I think. So, but basically people's money is still in these funds, and largely the values are written down to zero. I mean, one fund at the top of this list, Schroder ISF Emerging Europe, at least according to the published fund price, is down two-thirds this year, 66.7%. Now, that is one fund, I think, which has taken an interesting approach. It's effectively hived out its unsellable Russian assets into a separate fund. And so, you know, that's one approach I think we could see more. JP Morgan, Emerging Europe, actually announced they're taking a similar move recently.
Well, talking of JP Morgan, a kind of anecdote or one example from the investment trust side of things, JP Morgan Russian Securities, which was the only London, specialist Russian fund, not surprisingly, was the worst performer of 2022. Shares down 89%. It's a shocking stuff. Interestingly, though, you know, all that fall was in the run-up, and then, of course, in the outbreak of war in Ukraine. Actually, since the last week of March, it's essentially been flat. So, and there's been a change. The company has decided to change its name and change its policy. It'll become the JP Morgan Emerging Europe, Middle East and Africa Securities Trust. A bit of a mouthful, but you can see what it's doing there. Like one of its rivals, it's regionalizing its approach and just being about Russia. The other interesting thing about the performance is that, those shares are down 89%. But extraordinarily, the shares trade at a 77% premium to the asset value, which I think means that, the holdings have been written down to zero, but investors think there is value there. And in fact, this move to change the name and change the remit did cause some concern among its investors, those who had hung on, because there was a small vote in favour. And there's a feeling that investors didn't want to see those holdings sold or got rid of because there is value there. We shall see. But extraordinary event.
An interesting question.
Year. So we're possibly in danger of highlighting the negatives.
Yes, indeed.
There's plenty of them. But we're talking about Russia, and the impact that had on oil price is well known.
Yeah.
So should we talk about energy funds? Because investing in energy did well.
I think that's a good list. I mean, there are lots of lenses for which to view this topic, really. But one is, as you say, oil prices were already going up as global demand recovered after the pandemic, and Russia invading Ukraine and uncertainty over what that would mean for supply, really lit the fire under that, and particularly with natural gas prices, which in Europe have at points reached extraordinary levels. And if we look at how that's translated into fund performance, you know, we've got the oil and gas sector. There are specialized funds which invest in this. And of course, it's a popular area of value fund managers as well. I mean, we should caveat this by saying, you know, this comes after many years of bad performance for the shares of these companies. And of course, at one point during 2020, oil or a US benchmark of oil even went below zero. So this is just how volatile it can be. But to reel off what this year has meant in performance terms, BlackRock World Energy, so a specialist investing in these oil and gas shares, up 68%. Or Guinness Global Energy, another quite well-established fund which does the same thing, up 55%. Well, not to the same extent, but clean energy funds, which invest in things like wind turbine manufacturers and things like that, have also been quite a good area at points. Now, what's it meant on the investment trust side, Gavin? Because maybe, you know, there aren't quite these, well, there are a couple of specialist funds, but actually it's more about renewable energy infrastructure, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I'll come on to that shortly. But actually, I can match some of the names you mentioned with their investment trust
kind of
equivalent. So, yeah, if you're looking at the Numis do this, Numis Securities, the broker, publish a useful list, or they all do actually, a useful list of sort of risers and fallers. And year to date, top 15 risers, you know, is littered with a few energy and resources funds. Riverstone Energy up 48%. BlackRock Energy and Resources, which is a really interesting fund. It's playing both sides of the energy transition, investing in traditional energy companies that are, you know, trying to embark on the transition, but are also benefiting from this huge surge in oil and gas prices. Because the interesting thing that they're always flagging up is that, yes, the world desperately needs to move away from carbon fuels if we're going to do anything about climate change and the catastrophes that can cause. But all we've done so far is really reduce supply. We haven't done anything about the demand, i.e. as consumers, we're still using the stuff. So that pushes up the price. So as investors, you know, they're playing both sides. They are investing in clean energy, but they're also still very much investing in the old stuff. And the returns kind of show up the benefit of that approach.
Well, it's quite a challenging and uncomfortable topic, really, isn't it? Because I think in the UK, actually, you know, we've made, compared to some parts of the world, the US, relatively good strides with rolling out renewable energy. But as we've seen this year, the intermittent nature of renewable energy and lots of other factors mean it's actually natural gas, which still sets the electricity price in the UK, which is rather incredible, isn't it? And has had quite incredible effects.
I mean, yeah, I'm no energy expert, but it is quite incredible. And it is something that the government's looking at and will be reformed, and hopefully something will be done about that. Because, yeah, from a kind of punter's point of view, renewable energy...
It seems exactly the opposite of what
should be kind of free once you get down to it. Once, you know, all the setup costs and everything are arrayed, it should be why it's then linked to carbon energy. I can't really fathom. But trying to be positive, one of the extraordinary things about this year is, as you said, the renewable funds, those investment companies listed on the London Exchange, investing in renewable infrastructure, so investing in solar power, wind power, but also battery storage. Those, particularly the battery storage funds, did really, really well. But there was a lot of controversy about this because they're benefiting from high gas prices.
Indeed.
And so they were selling. So those funds, you know, it wasn't that all the renewable funds were sort of cashing in massively. Many of these funds actually enter into fixed price contracts. They're selling their, you know, forward selling their energy at an agreed price. So they're not necessarily benefiting from these massive hikes in the wholesale price. But one or two were, and generally all of them did, you know, did benefit from the increase in the price. So pick out a few names. Gresham House Energy Storage and Harmony Energy Income are the two top performers of my list with 25% and 32-33%.
They're extraordinary figures, aren't they? I mean, need to reiterate, these are people that own fixed assets. This is like infrastructure, right?
Yeah, these are kind of like alternative bond funds in a way. You know, they're about the income. They're alternative income. They're not investing in equities, quite the opposite. They're investing in infrastructure, But steady cash generation, income generation is what they're about, not about huge returns in capital. But the battery funds and the others have kind of proved that wrong this year. It has been an exceptional year, and you can't really expect that to keep on carrying on. Also, of course, you know, this didn't go out to political a notice.
These
extraordinary returns. And the budget, not the mini budget, the actual autumn statement with Jeremy Hunt as Chancellor, did impose a windfall tax of 45% on, you know, excessive profits. So it's set a price, and UK electricity pays a 45% tax on that. And it hasn't been, you know, the renewable fund sector isn't wild about that, it's got to be said. But it hasn't knocked the share prices as much as you think. They were already under the cosh a little bit, having done so well. People saw that some kind of windfall tax was coming. People are still working out what the exposure is. But initially, it doesn't seem too bad. It's partly because a lot of these funds have got fixed price contracts anyway. Secondly, it depends on what power price assumptions they had in their forecasts. And the lower they are, basically, the better they will be able to deal with the windfall tax.
Right.
It's kind of, well, you know, a number of them made statements immediately after the budget to say, actually, you know, this isn't too bad. There is a hit, but quite often it's offset by things like their inflation forecast. So inflation, they're doing well. Their money they make on their contracts is also linked to inflation. So although they're taking a knock on the windfall tax, they are making money on it in the inflation side of things. So you wrap it all up, it hasn't been a huge impact, but we'll kind of wait and see. There may be more updates at the end of the year or into early next year.
Well, Gavin, I'm going to jump on what you've just said and use it as an opportunity to segue into the next thing I think we wanted to talk about. I mean, what you've just been saying about the renewable funds there, I think holds for lots of these alternative income areas. It's complicated. And, you know, versus traditional fixed income, which shouldn't be that complicated. But you mentioned the mini budget. It was, I think it was the 23rd of September, if I remember rightly. I mean, can we just touch on that quickly and just how extraordinary the effects were?
Oh,
the ill-fated
mini budget.
The so-called mini budget.
The short-lived trust regime and Kwasi Kwarteng's statement. Yes, that unaudited announcement of tax cuts sent markets into a spin.
£45 billion of unfunded tax cuts, I think it was initially.
So UK's credit rating takes a hit. The gilt markets, those government bonds, took a hit. And as we've sort of highlighted already,
yeah,
extraordinary losses on what have traditionally been traditional safe UK government bonds have fallen massively. And, you know, that had been going on all year because interest rates are going up and, you know,
yes,
gilts and government bonds don't like rising interest rates. But the chaos, frankly, caused by that announcement, that unexpected announcement, caused those losses to, they slumped. There was a massive slump
right in
the government bond market. It had an unexpected effect on pension funds, on liability-driven investments. There's a lot of news about that.
They
had to dump their assets, and they were in a bad place and needed bailing out. So it took a Bank of England intervention.
Indeed.
A terrible mess.
I mean, I'll reel off a quick stat here about just how incredible the effect was. So the 30-year gilt yield at one point in the wake of the so-called mini budget rose 150 basis points, so 1.5% to more than 5% over just 3 days. I mean, that's a move that, you know, should never happen. I think it's fair to say it's almost comparable to the financial crisis in that, you know, it's the sort of thing that the models that these pension funds would have used just didn't account for.
So as yields go up, the prices are going down.
Indeed.
So these were really big falls. And also government gilts are a benchmark asset. They seem, you know, they're supposed to represent kind of risk-free return. So lots of other things are priced off them, particularly property. You know, property, real estate is about the yield, the income you get from rent.
Yeah.
So obviously, investing in commercial property, it may be solid, but it's not as safe as lending to the UK government, or at least in theory. So the yields that that asset class will offer will be higher than the government bond one.
And indeed, I'll jump in quickly here and say, according to my research, I've actually forgotten which index it is, but UK properties, I think we could say UK commercial property, down 31.6% this year. Actually, it's probably that's probably listed property. But anyway, it's a huge fall.
It's a huge fall because it basically the chaos in the bond market, the gilts market, was then as a knock-on effect to, you know, really top down sort of level, macro kind of level. It's not really a comment so much on the individual buildings. Of course, there are, you know, huge issues around working from home and the prospects for the office sector or residential property. Not that commercial property funds invest in that, but there's huge questions to ask about individual properties, depending on where they're situated, in terms of demand, in terms of the recession. But just on a very top-down level, you know, if government bonds fall and their yields shoot up, well, then it has an instant effect on property and the funds and investing in them.
And maybe we can then come on to, of course, I think, we've been speaking quite a lot about equity funds other than the Renewable Infrastructure Trust. But of course, you know, a really important sector is balance funds, capital preservation funds, funds which use a mix of assets in order basically, you know, the promise is that they can grow investors' wealth while protecting from the worst of the downsides. Now, the investment trust sector has a small but quite varied, interesting group of these funds. I mean, how have they been getting on this year?
Yeah, broadly, well, you know, in the context of some of these big double-digit or more falls in the indices and stock markets we've been talking about, then, on investment trusts, you're kind of like three strong wealth preservation funds, personal assets, capital gearing, and Ruffer. And, they've all done pretty well. Personal assets and capital gearing do look to be heading for a small loss this year, around 2 to 3%, which, you know, they won't be pleased about. It doesn't happen very often, but there you go. They were both, you know, caught up in the volatility around the mini budget and didn't like that one bit, although it did obviously provide them with buying opportunities. Their rival, Ruffer, has done better, is up 7% at the moment. So it's kind of won the capital preservation contest for this year.
But interesting.
But I'm so glad. I just noticed before we came on air, can't talk about this without mentioning the BH Macro Hedge Fund. Not totally comparable with the likes of personal assets and capital gearing that I just mentioned, but a hedge fund that's trading in currencies, trading in bond futures, you know, pretty complicated stuff.
Opaque.
Yeah, yes, indeed. That's a good way to describe it. But its aim is capital preservation. It wants to move in the opposite direction to markets. And whatever
they're doing
at Brevan Howard, you know, the shares are up 23%. It had a very good pandemic. And so that's kind of, you know, in a difficult year, it's once again shone as a fund that can make money when markets are falling.
Yes.
Any fund equivalents like that?
Well, there are indeed, you know, how widely invested our listeners will be in them, I'm not sure. But for example, picking out the, returning to our best funds of the year list, AQR, a US firm, I think its approach is kind of trend following, it's often called, you know, in the same kind of bucket as Brevan Howard. I'm sure they do very different things. But for example, AQR systematic total return up 28% in the year to November. So, of course, some of these absolute return, or I shouldn't say absolute return, but, you know, some of these alternative areas, you know, have performed very well with these kind of hedge fund strategies. After, you know, I think it might be worth saying, for those funds anyway, a few difficult years.
Yeah.
But something I'd like to come on to actually is, you know, on the balance funds, I mean, the classic model that lots of these kinds of funds use has been the 60-40 portfolio, 60% in equity and 40% in bonds. And for many years, for many decades, this has delivered great returns. And this year, I think it's fair to say it's after a long time predicting that it would, it's rather come off the rails.
Because
the bond side has totally collapsed. And a good window into that is the very popular Vanguard Life Strategy range. So these are funds run by Vanguard Passive Giant, which use a fixed equity allocation and then a fixed bond allocation. And they do some tinkering behind the scenes. But basically, they invest in tracker funds, that allocation, and they promise they're going to stick to it. And it's been a painful year for these funds. I mean, so for example, the 60% equity fund, if I can find it, actually hasn't done... I'm struggling to find it in my documents now, so we'll talk about the 20% and the 40% fund. But anyway, the key point is the more bonds they own, so in theory, the safer they should be, we used to think, actually the worst they've done. So Vanguard Life Strategy 20% equity, down about 15% this year, versus kind of peer group down more like 10.7%, and the 40% equity down 12.5%. So for funds which people maybe thought were safe as houses, quite bad losses. And then we can compare that. They also run a Vanguard Life Strategy 100% equity fund, which, as it suggests, is just invested in tracker funds. And so that is down only 4.7% for sterling investors. So again, you know, the pound's weakness kind of cushioning the losses in global markets. Now, you know, this is a fund range which has had massive inflows in recent years. For example, the 60% Vanguard Life Strategy, 6% equity, has taken in $6 billion over the last 3 years. So, I mean, perhaps in a way, the worst of the damage is already done. But I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with those kinds of balanced funds and funds which espouse that traditional split between shares and bonds. Next.
Well, it's going to make people presumably a bit more circumspect about them in the future. It's not that they're necessarily, you know, you write them off, but,
indeed,
you know, anything, you know, events can conspire to knock any investment approach, investment fund, and these kind of balanced funds wouldn't have expected to have that kind of drawdown, that kind of fall.
No.
But now we've seen that they can. Of course, looking forward, I mean, you would hope people weren't too badly exposed to that. You know, didn't have all their pension, for example, in it, because otherwise that has, you know, big personal implications, you know, deferring your retirement or whatever.
Yeah.
But looking forward, I mean, bonds have had a terrible year.
Mm.
But actually now, looking forward, looking a bit more sensible, because the problem with them was after years of money printing, central banks like the Bank of England and the US Federal Reserve pumping out, you know, electronically created iffy money to buy up bonds, pushing up their price, pushing up all asset prices, and effectively, and that's what led partly to the bubble that we had at the end of last year, which has come unwound this year. But so bonds rose up in value, and their yields weren't very good, and in fact, often, that, yeah, their yields have been below inflation.
Yes.
So you are, you know, guaranteed to lose kind of money.
Well, I think
now that's changing. Now we've got some real yields on bonds, and maybe that will support their price and their investment attractiveness going forward.
Well, I think that's one of the interesting things. You know, often people overreact to what's just happened. And, you know, here we are saying, oh, 60-40 portfolio on shaky territory, blah, blah.
Well, I mean,
blah, blah.
You can't. You know, you don't want to talk away the problem totally. I mean,
no.
We started off talking about Scottish Mortgage, and we're both in there. You know, how long is it going to take for that fund or any of these other funds, big losses, to, you know, repair those losses?
Well, I think that is
some time.
But I think, you know, what some of these active, allocation or balanced fund managers have been talking about, and indeed, you know, bond fund managers have been saying is now, as you said, there really is a lot better value in the bond market. I mean, you know, I haven't got the figures for me, but as you say, you can find bonds which actually are producing, you know, have a pretty high yield, you know, investment grade yields, you know, well above 5% in some cases. And still, that is below inflation, but it's much more attractive than it was. And if you think inflation is going to come down, then, yeah, that could be the way to go.
Well, on that sort of thinking then, shall we begin to, you know, wrap up and think about the outlook and, you know, areas that we think look interesting? You know, this is not investment advice.
No, it's not,
but just sort of things that occur to us as we were sort of looking around and reporting on things.
Well, I have to admit, Gavin, I'm slightly struggle with this one. It's a difficult environment. I mean, for me, you know, I think it's easy to be worried about equities with a recession coming, and I suppose, you know, just how bad you think that recession will be is an open question. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, exactly, that's the big unknown. If it's a mild recession and, you know, unemployment in the UK is still currently low, obviously there's a huge cost of living crisis going on with inflation, but and corporate profits are going to fall, and you know, it could be bad. It could be a deep recession, but it might not be for that. It might be more of a milder one. If it's a milder one, then I think there is a case for starting to look where the recovery could come. And in fact, we started to see the recovery in investment trusts that I look at are good, because in a way because their kind of share price...
They sell off too much and go to big discounts.
That's right. They fall below their asset value on a discount when the things are out of favor. And when things are in favor, they're closer to asset value, or they even rise to premiums above it. So you can see they indicate sentiment quite nicely.
So we've kind of broad brushstrokes. Where do you think that's characteristic?
UK smaller companies, UK mid caps. We've already said since 2016, since the Brexit referendum, UK stock market's been unloved. It's been another difficult year. But the fund so these investment trusts have fallen very heavily. 20-30% falls this year is not uncommon. They're on big double digit discounts. But the fund managers are saying, these are good companies, not all of them exposed. They're investing in good companies. They would say that, of course. But they're not necessarily exposed to the UK economy. They might be more global specialists. And you've seen that the shares actually start to recover quite nicely in the past 4 to 6 weeks. So, one of the big debates we haven't really touched on, but it's like value versus growth.
Yeah.
The growth sell-off, value's done very, very well. So I'm wondering whether something like Aberforth Smaller, Aberforth's a very respected, long-standing specialist in UK smaller companies, got a very committed value stance, i.e. buying companies when they're out of favour. It's had a good year, relatively good year. 8% share price fall is actually good. It's an 11% discount. I'm wondering, if that could become a positive return next year. Then on the growth side, there's something like Henderson. You're spoiled for choice in sectors like this.
Yeah.
But, a much more growthy style from Henderson smaller companies managed by Neil Herman. 32% fall. That's nasty. But, do this year's losers become next year's winners? 32% fall, 10% discount. I think that's interesting. And then property and kind of near bonds, I would have quickly flag up. Property has had a terrible time, particularly since the mini budget. Very interest rate sensitive. But if we're not going into a deep recession, then I think some of those discounts and high yields are really attractive, particularly the UK generalists that don't specialize in one sector. So logistics has been very hot. There's been, the specialist funds have done very well for the past few years. Perhaps it's the time of the more balanced funds that invest in a range of different sectors within the UK. So Picton Property Income, Schroder Real Estate, take your pick. It's an interesting sector. And shares on big discounts. And then lastly, I'd flag up some of these alternative income funds, investment companies investing in infrastructure or bonds related to infrastructure or doing specialist things. One of my favorites is something called Biopharma Pharmaceutical Credit. So it lends to drug companies in the US. It's not a massive discount. It's not had a terrible year. 3% discount, but it's offering a 12% yield because it's paying a special dividend. It's really generating loads of cash. I don't think people fully appreciate it. Then there's something called Sequoia Economic Infrastructure Income. Again, 7% yield and on a discount. I mean, it's had its mishaps. It was investing in Bulb Energy or lending to it rather. And, it's had to do some write downs. It hasn't been be totally unscathed. None of these funds have. But the question is it in the price? And I think there are some very interesting yields in it and its rivals. And I think that's my thoughts for now.
Interesting, Gavin.
Just ideas, not advice.
Very interesting, Gavin. Well, I'm going to be a bit more tight-lipped than you about specific funds, I'll be honest. I've also been thinking that that kind of small cap value area, actually it has had a good year. I've been wondering, maybe that's an area to continue to stick with next year. But, for example, I spoke to Richard Penny, a fund manager at Crux yesterday, who's just launched a smaller companies fund. His special situations fund, for example, has done very well this year, buying into some of these slightly unloved sectors where there's been a recovery. He would argue sort of worries are overdone. I think that could be an interesting area to watch, not just in the UK, but say with someone like Ollie Beckett in Europe as well, who won an award for his trust at our recent Investment Trust Awards. The other area I would just mention, again, with no specific funds, is I wonder if emerging markets looks quite interesting. I mean, it's been hit by the strong dollar this year. China's a massive part of the index. There's been, well... big problems caused by zero COVID policy and other things like that. That looks like it could be starting to change. Now, Chinese stocks have already seen quite a big bounce, but I wonder if there could be good opportunities in emerging markets next year.
Good idea. That's very topical, and I think you've got a point. Well, I think we've left the audience, the listeners, with some ideas there. It's early December. We're still sort of wading through.
We're
the
trying to get our heads around it ourselves.
Exactly. But I think there's a few ideas. And well, let's hope 2023 proves to be, calmer and kinder than 2022.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you, Gavin.
Let's do this again sometime.
I hope so.